And now, more news from the Paris Olympics. It seems the GB women's track team have been pulling in medal after medal in a run not seen in years and years of Olympic track events. We have here in the studio the head coach of the GB women's track team. So tell me, you must use rigorous training techniques to achieve such results.
Actually, it's quite simple, really. We attached a life-size cutout of William Shatner, naked apart from wearing a dirty pair of wife fronts, to the motorised trolley and use it like a greyhound race in reverse.
Those are certainly unorthodox training methods, but as long as it achieves results.
You should see what they do with the GB women's swim team.
May I just say?
Yes.
Ooh!
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in our long line of Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
And I, yes, I am merely Keith tonight.
Aww. Yep. Yes. Where is your significant other?
Unfortunately, a council meeting.
No! Okay.
No!
That's what I've heard.
At a council meeting.
Ah.
Reporting on those naughty little councillors.
Mm-hmm.
She's scrutinising them.
With an inscrutable scrut.
Yes.
So is she counting all the panels on the council chamber wall?
Probably.
Mm, well, okay, then. Right, fair enough.
If the scrutiny meeting is anything... No, I wasn't saying that.
Anyway, dear listeners, unorthodox training besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo! Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh.
Leaked spin-off finally confirmed.
Ooh.
For many, many months now, there has been a moist dripping of leakage from the Hooniverse. And now, finally, RTD2 has gushed out the facts. The war between the land and the sea is confirmed and will star... Gugu Mbatha-Raw and Russell Tovey. I do apologise. Both playing new characters rather than Tish Jones and midshipman Alonso Fame. Being a unit-based spin-off, we will also be seeing Gemma Redgrave as Kate Lethbridge-Stewart and Alexander Devrient as Colonel Christopher Ibrahim. Oh, I like him. Russell T. Davis is showrunning and has co-written alongside Kabam! And Praxis Pete McTee. The 5-episode series will be directed by Dillian Holmes-Williams, who recently worked on 73 Yards and Dot and Bubble. It has been blurbed as...
When a fearsome and ancient species emerges from the ocean, dramatically revealing themselves to humanity, an international crisis is triggered. With the entire population at risk, units step into action as the land and sea wage war.
Ooh. Ooh. Filming begins in August with an unknown release date for the BBC and Disney Plus, though autumn 2025 looks to be a good bet.
So it's finally real.
Yeah, I think they actually had an official bulletin denying any spin-offs at one point.
Did they? I can't remember that.
I believe they did, yeah. I'm willing to admit that I could be mistaken.
It has been known, indeed the name has been known for a long time now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wondering why autumn, because... If the pattern fits, we're getting new series of Who in late autumn, early winter.
No, it's going to be... They're talking about March next year for
season
2.
Oh, right, because so I was going to say it would make sense to have one at the beginning, you know, sort of like spring, summer, and one autumn, winter.
Yeah.
If it's anything like last time, well, Sarah Jane Adventures was basically created to keep the production in-house and all the staff together.
Yeah.
So they're basically filming this before they do, hopefully... Do series season 3 with Gator or whoever.
Yeah. Star Trek! Comic-Con news.
Ooh.
Another long-rumoured series has finally been announced. This time, Star Trek : Starfleet Academy.
Mm.
Technically, it was announced last year, but what with the Paramount problems, it was less clear if it would ever happen. But their re-announcement at the San Diego Comic-Con has confirmed that it's about to go into production. Mm. Set in Star Trek : Discovery's 32nd century, we now know it will star several STD cast. Mary Wiseman and Sylvia Tilly. I'm going to muck this up, I do apologise. Tig Notaro as Jet Reno. And here we go again. Oddeb Fier as Fleet Admiral Charles Vance.
Isn't he running to be the vice president with Trump?
No, I don't think so. No, okay. Because he was the native from the first Mummy film.
Oh, was he? Oh. Okay.
Yeah, the one who survived. I
haven't seen that in 20-plus years.
Yeah. Anyway, Robert Picardo will also return to live action as Voyager's holodeck.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
Yep. Oh. Holly Hunter will play the Academy's Chancellor. Oh. Paramount described the series as...
Under the watchful and demanding eyes of their instructors, the cadets will discover what it takes to become Starfleet officers. As they navigate blossoming friendships, explosive rivalries, first loves and a new...
Give me the stick.
Yep.
Give me the... Thank you.
Bondage. Enemy that threatens both the Academy and the Federation... itself.
The series starts shooting shortly, with production and post-production expected to last about 12 to 14 months. A little less tangible is the announcement development work in a new live-action comedy series set in the 25th century. Paramount tweeted...
From co-creators Justin Seaman and Tawny Newsom, in this live-action comedy, Federation outsiders serving a gleaming resort planet find out their day-to-day exploits are being broadcast to the entire quadrant.
Newsom plays Beckett Mariner in Star Trek : Lower Decks.
Ah.
Little otherwise is known at this point. Also announced as part of the Intergalactic Friendship Day panel, featuring Star Trek and Doctor Who head honchos Alec Kurtzman and Russell T. Davis, there is indeed a crossover of sorts coming out.
Mm-hmm.
You have nicked one of my addendums, you utter. Eastside Games currently has a mobile game for each franchise, Star Trek : Lower Deck - The Badgie Directive, and Doctor Who : Lost in Time. There will be a limited time crossover for both games, described as...
It's a lot for you to do in this.
There is.
I know. The player will experience the story of a mysterious space-time ripple that throws the Doctor on board Star Trek Lower Decks USS Cerritos, while Lieutenant Brad Boimler and Ensign Beckett Mariner find themselves thrust into the enigmatic Doctor Who universe, with the ripple disrupting the very fabric of reality. The Doctor must join forces with the resourceful crew of the Cerritos, while Boimler and Mariner team up with the legendary River Song. Together, they race against time to repair the ripple and set things right.
The event starts in both games on the 1st of August.
Mm.
I have seen and played. They are essentially the same game with different bells and whistles.
Yeah, right.
It's got a different skin on it, but essentially it's press this, twiddle that, and doodah the other, and you progress through the game.
Right.
But essentially, as I said, they are different graphics, but the same game.
Yeah, I saw some pictures, and they've changed up the look of the characters to match the universe. So,
yeah.
So the Doctor looks like he's from Lower Decks in the Lower Decks game, and the Lower Decks characters look like they're in different art style.
Yeah, the Lower Decks game is a more cartoony style. Yeah. The Doctor Who game attempts to be sort of a more realistic animation style.
Yeah, you can tell they're meant to be real people rather than a bit Simpsons-like.
Yes.
Yeah, and Academy sounds potentially interesting, although it sounds quite a lot like Gen V, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's quite interesting because the major pull for Star Trek at the moment in the fandom is Star Trek Legacy, which is continuing the Picard saga, but obviously not with Picard, but with the other associated characters. There's not necessarily any call for Academy.
No, I don't think there's been talk for decades about an Academy.
Yeah.
Well, it's never happened.
There's been talk since the
the films.
Third film, fourth film, I think, of the original series.
Yeah, and it never happened, though now it clearly is, but maybe you really wanted it. But
yeah, as I said, it might do better, it might do wonderful, or I got a feeling it might go down the Discovery Season 1 route.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily what people want. But we'll wait and see. I could be mistaken.
We'll see. And there's talk also rumours of a Picard film.
Yeah. Ooh,
maybe a TV film, a bit like Section 31.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I have to hurry up. He's not getting any younger.
He's not a spring chicken anymore. Marvel Comic Con News.
Oh, yeah.
The big San Diego news from Camp Marvel has surprised many, namely that Robert John Downey, the Jr., is coming back to the MCU, but this time as the villainous Doctor Doom.
Ooh. Doom.
The ailing Disney is not just getting back the littlest Downey, but they also have persuaded Infinity War and Endgame directing duo, the brothers Russo, back to direct the next Avengers film. That film has morphed from the Kang Dynasty to Doomsday. It is currently penciled in for the 1st of May 2026, to be followed by Avengers : A Secret Wars on the 7th of May 2027. Coming rather sooner is the Fantastic Four film, due for the 25th of July 2025. This now has the official title of The Fantastic Four First Steps. So
is it going to be them as babies? Muppet babies and Fantastic Four?
Origin story, undoubtedly.
I don't know, it's quite a bold move. They'd be as surprised when they did the unveiling of Robert Downey Jr. on stage.
Yeah, well, he was all in the green and the mask, the Doctor Doom mask.
And a load of Doctor Dooms on stage. Yeah,
with a load of Doom bots.
So he's now going to be a villain. Mm. Presumably a variant of Tony Stark.
Yeah, we're into the multiverse, because certainly with... you have Loki with the Time Variant Authority, which turns up in Deadpool v. Wolverine.
Very heavily.
Yeah. Very heavily. But yeah, so one is assuming it's a variant. We'll have to wonder how much it adheres to the comic book story. Because I know there's been two other variations of Doctor Doom in the other films, which were...
Rubbish.
Well, I won't say that the last one was rubbish. The first one was okay.
It's possible,
but it wasn't the actual Doctor Doom. It was a variation of Doom. It wasn't comic strip Doom. From Latvia.
Which I think the character was meant to be originally. But royalty or something, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Well, certainly by the end of it, he's the ruler of Latvia.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody's got to be. Bit of a dead giveaway for a villain having the surname Von Doom.
Victor Von Doom. Yeah.
All we can hope is a Fantastic Four is better than the previous versions.
Yeah. I don't even remember ever seeing Doctor Doom in live action. He was in other Fantastic Four films.
He's been the main villain in all three Fantastic Four films. He shared it with, I think, Galactus in the second one.
That's right.
Right, okay. Yeah,
the Silver Surfer one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did see the first from, 15, 20 years ago?
I think... As I was discussing, deep cuts from 98.
98 was it,
I think 98 was because it was one of the first Marvels before it was an official Marvel film.
Yeah, with Chris, whatever his name is. The Chris who does Captain America.
Chris Evans, yeah.
Chris Evans, yeah. Not the DJ.
Yeah. Not the one that got married to Billy Piper.
No. Not that we know of.
You're starting a rumour now?
It's Anne Churchman. Dead. Alpha Centauri actress Isan Churchman has gone to the stars, aged an impressive 99.
Very good innings.
Yep. Nearly got to the 100. To the wider world, Churchman is best remembered for playing the ill-fated Grace Archer in the BBC Radio 4's long-running soap opera, The Archers. Way back in 1955, her character was killed off in a stable fire as an attempt to overshadow that evening's launch of the commercial TV network ITV. Despite feeling she was selected due to a pay dispute raised with the actors' union Equity, Churchman did return to The Archers several times, playing five additional characters over the years. Though sticking mainly to voice acting, she did occasionally appear in front of cameras on such programmes as The Railway Children, 1957, Crossroads, Nigel Neal's Beasts, Softly Softly, and 1999's Oliver Twist. TV programmes where she provided just voice work included Space Patrol, which I think was a marionette thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Flip Side of Dominic Hyde, and four Doctor Who stories. Curse of Peladon, Monster of Peladon, Planet of the Spiders, all John Pertwee era. And again in 2017 for The Empress of Mars. Three of those saw her voicing the iconic cloak-wearing Alpha Centauri. She was a spider in Planet of the Spiders.
Yeah. Oh. Mm. That's her. That's very
good innings. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if she had the crown as the longest gap for that brief period of time before William Russell returned to do Ian Cheston. It may be.
Yeah. It was Crossroads actor that had it before William Russell.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah.
She was in Crossroads, so it could have been her.
I don't know who it was. I don't watch Crossroads, but I remember them saying he broke Crossroads.
Yeah.
It's either Crossroads or Coronation Street, one or the other.
Okay, yeah.
But he broke their record.
Right. So, yeah. Any addendums, then?
I had two addendums, but now I'm down to one, thanks to you.
Oh, yes. An addendum is the main news.
Yes, Svinehunt! Yes, Svinehunt! I have an addendum.
Lay it on us.
Space 1999.
Mm-hmm. Dead.
Is back.
From the dead.
Ooh.
In role-playing form.
Okay. You have me all excited there.
Mordiffius, who do the Star Trek adventures.
Yep.
Have done quite a few Star Trek adventures, actually. That goes quite well, and they've released a second edition. But they are currently doing a crowdfunder for a Space 1999 tabletop game.
Does everyone have to wear short bobbed purple bob wigs when they play?
That's UFO, isn't it?
UFO.
That's UFO, yes. That was UFO.
You've got to wear a coloured sleeve.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Got to wear the sleeve.
Yep, so.
Like you're a vet, are you, is that?
No, we're not talking All Creatures Great and Small.
So if you go to the Mordiffius site, which I'm quite sure we can put on
the link up to that,
I think at the moment it is in crowdfunding stage.
Okay.
So whether it will come to pass,
Kickstarter or something.
Yeah, but I think they're doing quite well.
Okay, good.
So there is but 75, that is a deep, someone there is a fan.
Yeah.
Oh, good grief. Yeah.
It is a British company, by the way, so it's...
Right. Presumably, this has the opportunity to branch out to UFO and things like that. Space 1999 was basically going to be the second season of UFO, was it?
Yeah, it was originally going to be the second season, then they decided to...
I know Big Finish have done a crossover between UFO and Space 1999, haven't they?
Yeah.
So you can see that happening.
So it's obviously when the moon was still in orbit, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
At that point. They had a moon base in UFO and it was meant to have been expanded out into moon base Alpha.
Moon base Alpha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it got killed off by Freddie Feinberg.
Mm. Right. Well, that second season, few people think it's quite as good as the first, but...
Anyway, up.
Any more addendums?
Nope.
No.
We are addendumed out.
That, and so endeth the news. Oh. Well. We have been watching stuff, haven't we?
Oh, yes, we have.
Something back from the mists of time!
Way back.
Itself. We have been watching Doctor Who. The Celestial Toymaker.
Animation.
Pause music.
Just in case someone thinks we've got a secret stash of missing episodes.
Although, straight off, I think if you had the option of watching the original or the new animation, I think the animation might actually be more interesting to watch.
Oh, from a visual point of view, definitely. Yeah.
Watching that final episode in black and white, it is very static, it is very stagey.
Yeah.
It is very low production values.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
very low visual interest.
When I ever get asked from now on, Doctor Who has changed, it's not like it used to be when I was a child, I don't understand why it's changed, I will point them to this story and say, so, do you think it could have survived to the present day like this?
Yeah.
I don't like that animation style they use.
No, I hate the animation.
It's not quite Web of Fear.
No,
it's a lot better than Web of
Fear. It's better than Web of Fear. It works for this story.
Yes, I think it particularly does.
But my real bugbear with it is the rendering of Stephen and Dodo. Mm.
Not so much Dodo, more Stephen.
As in, who the hell are... Did they say moody teenage young man? And that's what they got. It looks nothing like Peter Burmese.
I have to say, I watched this with Fake Keith.
Mm.
Fake Keith said, throughout the whole of it, who's that?
Yeah.
Who's that? She likened the visages to Thunderbirds.
Yes.
They look nothing like what they're
meant to. They're very caricature.
They're beyond caricature.
And now I have to agree. They are very caricatures. They are not necessarily caricatures of Peter Purvis and what's her name?
Jackie Lane.
I don't know who they're the caricatures of, but they're not of these people.
Yeah, caricatures usually bear resemblance to the person it's a caricature of. There is nothing there.
I'm sorry, Peter Purvis with that chin looks more like Quagmire from Family Guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, even Matt Smith, when he first went into Who, would look at that chin and go, I'm blessed. It's not as bad as that.
My problems are, the elephant in the room is, yes, it's a hell of a lot better than the Web of Fear, the first attempt. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, I understand they tried to make that through COVID, an earthquake and flood, so I can barely give
also
them...
Also on a tiny budget, because I only did one episode
this,
of it.
This is it. I don't expect the animations to be very good, because calling it a minuscule budget is inflating it. But comparing this to the last set of cartoon animations...
Flash-style 2D.
It is... They're not even in the same room. They're not even in the same house. They're not even on the same street or same country. This is terrible.
I would beg to differ slightly. I'd say the Celestial Toymaker animation has a very, I wouldn't say retro feel to it, but a very 90s feel to it. Not when computer animation was in its infancy, but it's still sort of finding its feet a little bit.
I would say at an 80s influence, there are cut scenes on a PlayStation 1 that are better quality than what we're being given.
I'm halfway between the two here. I don't like the rendering of some of the characters' visages at all. I do like how they worked the actual stories, the colour they've brought in, the playing around with what's down is up and down, and all the rest of it. And I watched the last episode last night, i.e. the actual episode, the live action, the televised. And the difference in the storyline and how it's done isn't that much between that and the cartoon version, animated version. Yeah. You know, you'd sit there going, the same bits there. It's a little bit more with the roly-poly character, but it's all there. There is stuff in this that has been added that isn't in the original to make the link with the giggle. So the stuff with the hearts coming out, there's one scene, there's hearts coming out. That's a retrofit. I am quite pleased that the Doctor was made invisible for most of it, because at least that's one less character I have to sit there going,
No, I think the way it was animated, sort of the very bright and garish way, sort of adds to the whole theme of it. Its very nature, the Celestial Toy Maker, where sort of plastic toys are very bright, they're very cheerful and such. This is how I envisioned it to be, the whole realm of the Toy Maker. And another note I must add is, going back to sort of very 90s feel to it.
I think it was more 60s feel.
It's a PlayStation 1.
A moot point. One thing I must point out is, back in one of my 30-second-ish recommendations, I was talking about a documentary that was on the BBC back in 1992 called Exploring Cyberspace. Now, the way they animated the Doctor's hand when he was playing the Trilogic game, to me, when people were using the very early virtuality headsets, when they were manipulating objects in cyberspace, that is how the hand appeared.
Yeah.
I've had my rant. I think it's terrible, terrible, terrible. But looking on the positive side, I do like the way they utilised the graphics. Swirling, the multiple TARDISes, the large toy maker, which, as you said, harkens into the giggle.
Yes.
So I love that. It's just I couldn't get past the way it was presented.
Okay. Now, I think if you're going to do any of them in this style, this is the one to do.
This is the one you could get away with.
Yeah.
If you tried to do this in the traditional 2D animation we're used to, I don't think it would have worked nearly as well.
Not quite as well.
I don't think so.
Particularly, we got that scene with the clown doing the sort course, whatever it was. and then going upside down.
Yeah.
Well, that sort of thing you could do in 3D animation, which you couldn't really do so well in 2D, let alone in a studio back in 1966 or whatever it was.
Initially, when we was watching the BFI, it was like, oh my God, what the hell? But yeah, I think the animation suits the story. I like the colour. I like the overtopness about it. I don't mind the retrofitting. I just really wish they had spent a little bit more care and attention over the lead characters to make them look like the lead characters.
Yeah, there is
More like the lead characters than they do. What? The rendition of the little Lord Fauntleroy is actually quite good to Cyril. The actor. Cyril, that's better to Cyril, the actor, than our lead characters.
I found the supporting characters, you know, sort of some of them very unnerving, actually. Especially the clown and the rag doll with the button eyes. And what else? You're shaking your head, Keith.
Now, again, I couldn't get past the presentation of them.
But. Well, that's fair enough. And what else? You know, the cook and the soldier. I mean, I say they were very much like sort of knitted toys or sort of, you know, wooden soldiers.
I understand why they done it, but it was interesting. And I'm not sure if it distracted. They were originally all played by the same two actors. Who one of them was Yvette, not Yvette, Edith from Hello, Hello.
It was.
Madame Edith.
Yeah. One of them was Edith. The female was Edith.
Blimey.
I think that would have...
daft old bat.
I am not sure, because in the video, in the animation, they are distinct, separate entities, because they appear as different.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it lends it to it, having them the same animated corpses, or splitting them up as portraying them as different. I'm not sure which one I prefer.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they both add something different to the show, to the story.
Yeah.
One, they are different toys that have come into the toy maker's realm, and he's defeated. Another one, they are the same animated corpses that can have any personality installed in them. It's a different...
Yeah, I don't know how much...
I'm not sure which one's better.
Was in the script that they were meant to be the same, or is it just a production thing where we've got these actors?
Yeah,
they could be in costumes, you're meant to tell them week from week.
You have a week... Because they're only in the one episode. Each of the toys are only in one episode. So... no recording facilities, you might have forgotten who it was.
The only exception being Cyril.
In the original, yes. Not in the animated, because he first appears as the knave. That's Cyril.
He's the knave of hearts and the kitchen boy.
But he's a card in there. He doesn't look anything like Cyril. Yeah.
But they do recognise him as being the same character.
He's more of a Billy Bunter type character.
I thought he was actually based on Billy Bunter.
And he does actually say...
He was.
Yeah.
He does say, I'm Cyril, but my friends call me Billy.
Yeah. They must have
got him in trouble.
They got a stiffly worded letter from someone.
It was deliberate and there's... Actually,
if they hadn't said, my friends call me Billy, they might have got away with it.
But if I remember right, they had a stiffly worded letter from the estate of...
From Richmond Crompton.
Yes.
Yeah, but as overall, though, the story... I think it's pretty weak.
Yes.
Yeah.
I might even go as far as say the weakest Doctor Who story ever, because it is. It's not really a story. It's just a set of rather less than interesting to watch antics. Oh, we got to solve this puzzle. But yeah.
I've got to agree with you. It does get my Lord Nymon prize for absolute pointlessness.
Yeah.
Lord Nymon.
There could be a reason for this.
I know there was a lot going on behind the scenes.
Well, the main reason was they had to have two episodes where Bill Hartnell wasn't in it. Because he wanted a holiday. And he literally was on holiday for episodes 2 and 3. So they had to make a story where the companions' assistants are actually the lead roles, the ones that are doing it. And I suppose in some ways this is the best way to occupy them.
Same way.
When I was describing this episode to her fake Crumbly, she came out with a very interesting premise. Yeah, that this is nothing but a giant escape room.
Effectively, it was.
Indeed, on the Blu-ray, you get some of the cast do an escape room, a Doctor Who-themed escape room, which was frustrating.
Yeah, I bet.
having done a couple of escape rooms, and when you're there watching, you say, "What, you missed that?"
Yeah, obviously, yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, that's besides the point.
Well, we got out with 4 minutes to spare.
4 seconds to spare, I think. Oh, was more
like. I think it was less than a minute.
Yeah, it's less than a minute. So anyone can do it in minutes to spare. We get 4 seconds. It takes time to do that.
They were literally almost locking the door on our shoelaces as we went through. Yeah. This is not one I would watch that often.
No.
And I have to say, because whilst I appreciate what they did with it, and I appreciate that this is a technical bit of filming and all the rest of it, I'm not wed to this story.
No.
It's not a brilliant story. No. The fact that I can't see the lead characters, I don't mean that in terms of the actual Doctor's invisible for half of it. I just can't see them in the cartoon or in the animation itself.
I didn't mind that.
And the Toy Maker himself is quite a strong character.
Yes.
And in some ways, I like what they've done where they brought him back for the giggle. They've made him actually much more of a stronger and more robust character and villainous.
And more involved in the storyline.
Yeah, than this original.
The poor actor sitting in an empty studio talking to himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there again, here's another puzzle for you. Yeah. The Cine Mac, and they're just stuck with the companions for 25 minutes. No cutaway to anything else. It's just that.
The toy maker was always a very Mephistophelian, and I say this word correctly, Mephistophelian character.
He's Doctor Who's answer to Q.
Yeah.
Basically.
I did kind of wonder how Russell T settled on the Toy Maker. I mean, it fits with the whole thing. He wants to make this quirky aspect to this series. We're still living in the giggle and everything's upside down and everything else. This is a character that can allow him to do that.
Mm-hmm. I know it was out there. I know it was audio version.
Oh, yes.
It's got to be interesting to listen to. But this was released after Giggle. So it's not entered into the public consciousness that great amount.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I say. It's been retrofitted.
Yeah.
So that if anyone was watching it, they get the references that they see in the Giggle. Things like where the guns fire and they fire hearts. You've got a bit where there's an explosion and the explosion fires
there's that,
hearts.
That great weird psychedelic bit where you go into the Toymaker's mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really well done. I assume a similar thing happened in live action. It's been lost. Because there was just a section with
lots
sound,
of music. Yeah.
Sound effects. So something weird was happening.
Something was going on, but
I don't know what.
Weird camera effects, weird music.
Like I said, I don't object to style, what they've actually show on screen. It's just the style of doing it. It's just the animation that beats me over the head and thinks, the BBC think we'll buy anything.
I have to say, I think, this is the one they could get away with it on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just generally, after these BFI events, we're all sitting round and murmur and groan like Doctor Who fans love to. And I get a very strong impression that this particular style is the least popular of the animation styles
considering
of the Missing Stories.
Considering the level that they got the Flash cartoon animations up to, then this is a step backwards.
Well, the last 2D one a step backwards too. They didn't have the same compositing in the final section. So the last one they did in 2D was not as good as the one before that. And let's not forget that BBC America money has gone away now, so the budget's been slashed. And Disney certainly aren't interested in Classic Who. There's no money coming from them.
Yeah.
Mm. Part of me says, give it to the guys at Studio Ghibli. Well, have you seen the stuff they do?
How much it would cost for them to do
it? Yeah,
this is my objection. Not necessarily the Studio Ghibli, but I've seen other amateur versions of this that are streets better.
Really? Okay. Mm. Not by Ian Levine, I think.
No, not by I didn't mention Ian Levine, but I have seen versions out there. I've seen animated versions that are better, and this is the official version, and again,
yeah,
it looks
are they
like
entire
it's been done
stories?
It looks like it's been done in someone's backyard.
I don't know. I don't mind it at all. And, okay, some of the likenesses are not great. If they improved the likenesses, would it satisfy would
I
be enough?
For
maybe.
It would be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, for this one, for me, if Steve and Dodo had looked like Stephen and Dodo, I would have enjoyed the story much, much more. Because I felt the animation did fit the story. Mm. I liked the gariness. I appreciated what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And it really was that I kept having to remind myself who I was looking at. I mean,
there aren't that many characters.
Well, they almost look blooming same at certain points. But yeah, if, however, the next one is also, and I don't mean in the garish style, but is in this kind of style rather than...
As bad as.
You know, the ones that they've been before, I don't think I'll bother watching any more after that.
I mean, I would. I mean,
I definitely would.
Admittedly, the rendering of some of the characters leaves a little bit to be desired.
Excuse me.
Ha! Pause for scornful laughter. But I mean, I think it's a step off the beaten track.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, personally speaking.
And I think it worked for this story.
Yeah, yeah, oh, very much so, yeah.
I don't know if it'd work for, I don't know, Marco Polo.
This is it. You're confusing what I'm objecting to. I'm not objecting to the style, I am objecting to the physical animation.
But I think this one, more than any other of the animations, has been very divisive. It is very, very Marmite. Most of the others, people will sit there going, oh, it's not that good. Not, it's just, no, it's not that good. Well, I'd like the original. I'd like the, but why can't they do
it? Shall we take a vote on it?
Yeah, but in this case, this is one that's really, really... just on feedback and other stuff, really Marmited. You know, people either really like it or really hate it. Right. There doesn't seem to be that many in the
hands
middle.
Hands up who like it.
Yeah, half, two of us.
Mm-hmm. And hands up who don't.
Mm-hmm. One and a half, maybe.
I like aspects of it. There's aspects of it I don't like.
I will not buy this DVD, this Blu-ray. Oh, no. The only way I would have a copy of it is if it's included in some form of box set.
It will be, eventually.
I will not go out and physically buy this by itself.
Ditto.
Which is unusual for an animated Who, in my mind.
I don't know. I wonder if it's partly because we're so used to the 2D style of animation after... How long has it been? Is it 15 years we've been doing them now? A long time we've been doing them.
Yeah.
It's a very radical change of style. It's getting much more towards likes of Star Wars Rebels, that sort of thing, which is 3D animated.
I am not objecting to that. I understand progress. We have to... But we are not there yet for this to be sold.
Yeah. And how much is... they're throwing at Star Wars
Rebels. Yeah.
I mean, it's almost counterintuitive. Part of me sits there going, unless you can do me a Doctor Who cartoon that is to the level of Final Fantasy.
It's whatever get made, though, will it?
Yeah. Where it's so real, lifelike, it's almost lifelike, then I want it to look like a cartoon. I'm happy. My brain works. If you're trying to make it look realistic... It's that kind of like Happy Valley thing. You can recognise an android no matter how much they try to make it look human. It's almost like I either want the perfect one or I want to know that this is a cartoon. And this is kind of like trying to get a foot in best of both. And it just doesn't work. If you are going to do it, if you are going to do it, then you do it. But you make sure that the renderings of your characters are decent.
You think it's somewhere in that hinterland between both.
Yeah, it is really the rendering. It's almost like everything went on, the special effects, the background, this, that and the other. And it's almost like Dodo and Steve were an afterthought.
So you want them to be photorealistic?
No, I want them to at least look like the characters they're supposed to be.
If they are to be caricatures, them to be a recognisable caricature of that character, not Quagmire.
Yeah. I had no problem, but okay.
I had no problem with the fact that I knew it was meant to be Stephen because I recognised the jumper, not the face.
The voice.
Yeah, that was it. It was the face and the clothes. It was the voice and the clothing. Not the face.
If going back to Star Wars again, if you look at Attack of the Clones live action and then look at Clone Wars, the Anakin Skywalker in Clone Wars is very much a caricature with a big chin.
I understand that, but it's a recognisable caricature. That's the point.
If you had had just the still of Stephen and someone said to you, here's the picture, here's the head, no voice, no outfit... They're from Doctor Who. Who are they? Do you think you would have first of all said, oh, that's Stephen?
But you know it is because it's...
Precisely.
Yeah, but there again, in summing up, I enjoyed it despite its flaws.
I enjoyed it, but like Keith, I wouldn't be buying it.
I didn't enjoy it because of its flaws. As I say, it's not a fast-paced story to begin with. So it's one that is dragged down by that. This, to my mind, this animation drags it down to virtually unwatchable.
I bought the DVD because what?
You poor fool.
Yes, no, I haven't.
No, because I am a completist where it comes to such things. And I mean, I am glad I did.
Yeah,
I like to watch. I like to enjoy what I watch. I didn't enjoy this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're going way over time here, so.
I'm only going round in circles.
Yes.
We're like politicians. Tell us what you thought of this episode.
Were you going to say travesty?
I wouldn't. No. Tell us what you think at show.
At staggering.
Stories.
Dot.
Net. Woo.
So, what's next on the roster?
Well, if we go back.
Mm. Back?
Not quite to 1966, but to 1981.
Oh, yes.
Ooh.
There was a film.
Yes.
Which has recently had a TV adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
On Apple TV. Mm. A film by Terry Gilliam. A film called Time Bandits.
We watched this actually on the Channel 4 rather than the app.
Ah, okay.
And on Channel 4, it's Time Bandits, Series 1, Episode 1. But it's the film.
That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Obviously, someone somewhere... Oh, apparently there was a television series.
There is a television series being created at the moment or being shown at the moment on Apple
TV. So what can we say about Terry Gilliam and his fevered imagination?
I didn't watch this, and I'm not upset that I didn't. I think Bill tried to get me to watch it once. I like some Monty Python.
Yeah.
I like the sketch stuff. I don't get Gilliam's animation, cartooning kind of stuff.
This is live action, but it's definitely his stuff.
Yeah, it's that stuff. I get it, but it just doesn't... It's not my thing.
To my mind, the best way to sum it up is Monty Python adjacent.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Being that he is a Python.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's going to pull in favours.
Yeah.
And this is co-written with Michael Palin.
Yeah.
Mm. Who makes an appearance in the film.
As I say, you get at least three Pythons in the film.
Yes, John Cleese, Michael Palin.
Basically...
It's a three Python film, then.
Basically, it is a 12-year-old, Kevin.
Kevin.
Who has his bedroom invaded by six... Can I say dwarves? Little people?
Mm.
What's the current...
Dwarf, okay.
By six dwarves who are passing through to somewhere else, and Kevin gets picked up in the mess and gets dragged along with them through various time holes.
Yeah.
Yes, these dwarves used to work for the Supreme Being.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, and
they've stolen something.
Yeah, they have stolen a map of all the bodged job time holes throughout the whole of history, and are using it to rob people blind.
They are bandits.
Yes,
bandits so through time.
Pirates of the Caribbean meets
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Yeah, pretty much. It is very much a proto Bill and Ted, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a proto Bill and Ted, though it has bits of this have turned up in other things.
Oh.
I do definitely remember on two separate occasions it's been alluded to in Family Guy.
Oh, I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Yeah, so the one, the bedroom scene with them pushing the wall down to make a corridor.
Yes. Yeah.
Another one where you've had Stewie standing there with real lips on. Real time lips telling people to return the map.
Right, head of the Supreme Being.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard it described as a fever dream.
Good grief.
It is not hilariously funny.
No.
But there are amusing moments in it that will give a wry smile.
Yeah. And an incredibly stacked cast, really.
Oh, God, yeah.
Sean Connery.
Yeah. Ian Holm. David Warner
is evil.
Evil.
I think it's not mentioned in the film, but in the script, he's called Arthur G. Evil.
Oh, really? Okay.
So at one point in time, I did have in my possession the script book. They released it out. Yeah. Sean Connery was far too expensive for this film.
Yeah.
Because it's another George Harrison handmade film.
It is, yeah.
But on the off chance...
$5 million, apparently.
Yeah, on the off chance, they sent him the script. And the actual script direction was Agamemnon removes his helmet, and hopefully it's Sean Connery, who smiles at us in only the way Sean Connery can. And on those two lines, they got Sean Connery.
When for a mass-reduced fee, yes.
When I saw that scene, I thought, he's fighting that bull-headed creature. I thought, yeah, it's not in the labyrinth, and it's not Theseus.
No, that was...
Well, you know.
If you're looking at the bull-headed man, that is actually a helmet. It's a mask. It's not meant to be a bull's head. Because if you look at it closely, it's rotten. It is rotten and rather skeletal.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Kenny Baker's in it as well.
Yes.
Kenny Baker is fidget, is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think virtually all of the dwarves turn up in Star Wars at one point. Certainly as Ewoks. I know there's a publicity shot somewhere with their heads off, and I'm going, I recognise him.
Yeah. Jack Purvis sounds familiar. What's he been in?
And for the $5 million budget, it made $36 million on its initial run.
I think it was worthy of a sequel anyway.
I think it was number one for about 5 weeks in the US.
Yeah.
It did surprisingly well.
It was a shock. I got to admit, watching the whole thing, I think there's one of three paths it was taken.
Mm-hmm.
One, they were setting up for a sequel that just never happened. Or two, they run out of budget. Or three, they run out of ideas. Because it just ends.
It does just end.
Yeah, that was
quite a shocking ending.
Yes.
This is very much a family film.
You've got to remember, Kevin is 12 years old, so the impression is it's a kid's film, it's a child's film.
Yeah.
Your main protagonist is 12.
Just reading here, Gilliam has referred to Time Bandits as the first in the trilogy of imagination, followed by Brazil...
Right.
And ending with the adventures of... the adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Right, which I saw many years ago, probably 30 years ago.
No, I think... I have this on DVD somewhere.
I've seen Brazil, but not...
you got to watch Baron Munchausen.
Yeah,
I saw this one at this flick, so I do remember seeing this one at the cinema. I was that... I could go by myself.
Bit before I would have been about, seven-ish.
Well, Brazil was 1985, wasn't it?
Brazil, it was after... Because this was written while he was trying to get Brazil made.
Ah, right.
He's failed to get Brazil made.
Yeah.
So he somehow got this made instead.
Did this instead.
Yeah.
This came out on Laserdisc.
Yeah.
As well as VHS.
One of the first Laserdiscs.
And Betamax.
And speaking of lasers, yes, our thoughts must turn to Evil because he's going, now tell me about computers.
I mean, nipples for men and slugs. Can they operate machinery?
David Warner was brilliant.
He was, yeah.
David Warner chewing the scenery.
Oh, he was completely. Yeah, he knew the film he was in.
Again, he's one of these actors who knows exactly the level he's aiming for on what film he's in.
Now, the scene where he's talking about, no, I created myself. Yes, evil created evil. I had to raise an ironic chuckle because a year later in Tron, he was having the same conversation with the master control program. Yes, nobody created you.
I don't know if you noticed the set piece at the end.
Right.
You've got these big concrete blocks that look like Lego.
Yes.
There's the side of the wall which looks like a chessboard on its side.
Okay.
When the firemen crash in through the door, the first thing you see as he slams his foot down is a half-folded chessboard, half a dozen pieces of Lego, a tank, soldiers, knights in armour, and...
This is all in his imagination. This is
that's why it seemed to be heading until we have the final announcement at the end. you do feel that it could have been just a dream.
Yeah.
Jumanji-ish.
Yeah.
And then got Sean Connery turning up.
Then we got Sean Connery.
Which
apparently, again, Mr. Connery wasn't allowed in the country because he was on tax exile.
Right.
But he nipped in to see his lawyer, and as he was here, filmed that final bit. Because he wasn't allowed to work in the country because of tax reasons.
Right. There again, I mean, Kevin's parents, I mean, they were more interested in domestic appliances.
It's quite an interesting note. I noticed that at the beginning with his home, all the furniture's still wrapped in plastic.
Yes.
Deliberately wrapped in plastic to protect it.
Yeah. If you look at Arthur G. Evil, everything there, including his minions,
are wrapped in plastic.
Yeah,
true, you're right, yeah.
I'm not sure what he was trying to do, but there are various levels to this film.
Yeah, definitely.
And his parents have absolutely no interest in him whatsoever.
Oh, great, no.
Yeah. Harry from Boone.
Yes.
First thought of.
Again, he got, oh God, Jim Broadbent.
Yes.
Was in it as well. Yeah, a very small piece.
Yeah.
As the compare on TV and not the compare in the Fortress of Ultimate Evil.
John Cleese, of course, turns up as Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Doing his royal family's.
Yeah, Robin Hood, who, I think he based it on Prince Charles.
Yeah. Yeah,
so you're the poor eye. Jolly good.
Oh, you're a robber. How long have you been robbing?
and what do you do?
Yeah.
These are sort of horrible people.
Yeah, what awful people.
We note at the time, he was Prince Charles, not King Charles.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, and Michael Palin and his girlfriend, who keep appearing through time.
Through time, yes. Yeah. Patsy,
yes.
There was Shelley Duvall and...
Yeah.
Vincent.
Yeah, that's it. Patsy and Vincent.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a missed opportunity. They're in it twice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And comedy is the rule of three.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be.
So they really should have turned up again.
Yeah.
To really cap off the characters.
That's what I think. I think it just ended because they run out of ideas.
I don't know, yes. It reminds me a bit of Cecil Toy Maker.
There's very much it's just that vibe.
Yeah, just scenes where things happen. Mm. Then, okay, that's the end of that. On to the next scene where a new set of things happen.
Yeah, I can see...
No through line.
I can see how it will fit an episodic series. Because you have one with Napoleon. Mm-hmm. Very small guy. one with Napoleon. One with Robin Hood. Mm-hmm. One with Agamemnon. One on board the Titanic.
Yeah, indeed.
Where they order more ice.
Almost like a sketch show or a tableau. A series of tableaus. And in theory, they are connected.
Yeah,
sorry, Titanic. I just reminded the time tunnel.
But they didn't order more ice on the time tunnel.
No.
Yeah, so I've tried to watch it a couple of times and it just... I don't know if I wasn't smoking the right stuff at the time, if I wasn't drunk enough, you know. Yeah. But it really was a case of, this is my brain and this are not getting on.
Incidentally, Fake Keith said she watched it when she was 11, when it first came out, and hated it.
Ooh,
didn't like it.
Yeah,
thought it was rubbish. She watched it again with me and has reevaluated her opinion.
Okay, yes.
My wife, my darling wife, I love her immensely and deeply and utterly, but I can't get her to watch things. If I recommend something, tell it, watch this, she will watch it in her own good time. Mm. It took 25 years for her to watch Babylon 5.
Yeah.
So it's a case, I think, at 11 years old, she was taken to the cinema and told to watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Rather than...
Yeah, watch it for own free will.
I had suspected I might have seen it before, because back in the sort of mid-80s, 83, 84-ish, we often used to go to the video rental shop, get out a Betamax, as it was. We had Betamax on rental and watch it. But nothing in it reminded me, no memories were triggered at all.
I remember watching it on TV, so I'm not too sure what year it was on.
Yeah.
I think it is very much of its time as well. The look of it is very much the same look as you've got elements of it in Labyrinth, and you've got very much elements of it in Neverending Story. There was that thing at that era of the fantasy realm,
and
this is what that realm looks like. So it was in the right zeitgeist at the time.
Yeah.
Whether it started that zeitgeist or tapped into it, I don't know. But
to my mind, it comes across more of grubby fantasy rather than it's the lower end of Labyrinth.
Yeah, it's clearly didn't have a huge budget.
Yeah.
Mind you, the supreme being, when he took on human form, let's say he treated those guys like skivvies. He really did.
Well, again, it's the supreme being comes across, he appears, was it Sir John Gielgud?
No, Ralph Richardson.
So, that's it, Ralph Richardson. He appears as upper middle management,
sort of
grey suit, grey tie. He is very much the upper caste, the upper crust of society.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily know the people who do things. He has people to do things for him.
Yeah. As ever, it raises questions. If he's meant to be God, then
they don't know him that well.
How does God not know what's going on now? Why does he need these guys to go and find evil? And
there's one good line in it that I think sums up that attitude is, we better get back to creation, otherwise they think I've lost control again and put it down to evolution.
This is not an omnipotent God at all.
No, it's an amusing film. It's not a laugh out loud film. I'm probably playing it up more than it is, because I do have affectionate memories for it, but it does sort of bear up under scrutiny. But
I mean, I see it more as a series of vignettes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, as you'd expect, almost from a third of the Python writing.
But I say with the fevered imagination of Terry Gilliam added.
I think it would fit quite easily into a TV series format.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what this new series is going to be like is another matter.
It's out now, I think, isn't it?
So, that I'd worry, because love or hate Gilliam's style, he has a very, very specific imagination, a very, very specific style. It is very clever. Mm-hmm. Could someone else emulate that?
Well, that is the thing.
It is.
They do their own thing with it. But,
then it's not the Time Bandits, is it?
But,
really?
Well, as I said, from what I've seen of the trailers, due to the current age and attitudes, they're not dwarves these times.
Listening to some of the special features on the Blu-ray, the idea behind the dwarves particularly is that they were grown up. They were the height of children. They acted like children, although they were grown up.
Kevin 12 is the tallest one out of the group.
And they're most grown up of them as well.
It's quite interesting. I remember from the script book that there was meant to be 7 of them, the last one being Horseflesh, but he doesn't appear because there would be copyright to another set of dwarfs. Yes.
Which weren't created by Disney.
Which weren't created by them, but no.
They seem to have owned the rights traditional fairy tale.
Yeah, I think they were hedging their bets just in case.
Oh, speaking of the 7 dwarves, an interesting piece of trivia. Did you know that one of the 7 dwarves is actually going to be called Snoopy?
I did not
know that, no.
If you look very closely where they all look over the edge of the bed at Snow White when she wakes up, you can see it's all carved into the wood of one of the headrests, the word Snoopy.
Mm. I shall have to look that now, so I'll look that up on YouTube. I
don't think it's a classic.
No.
I'm not sure if any of Gilliam's truly classic, although I've not seen all of them by any means. I've never seen Brazil.
Brazil, I have seen them all. Depends on your definition of classic.
I think it's potentially a slightly niche market.
Yeah.
It's a particular style of directing.
I mean, without giving too much away, Brazil is very much like the ending of Time Bandits. It stops.
Yeah.
Right. Like Holy Grail.
Yeah. Well, they definitely did run out of money. I would recommend this.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to see the TV series and see how it compares, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will.
And so, dear listeners, if you enjoyed watching The Time Bandit, share your thoughts with us at the following at show@staggeringstories.net.
And before we go further, there is one omnipotent being we need to say hello to.
He's looking down on us.
Hello, head of Pertwee!
Hello, Handles!
McInky McSquirch the Lot! Various Nebulas! Terrence!
Dave Zilla the Mighty! Fascist Spock!
Nazi Churchill!
What's Gonk's name again? I forget.
It's not Adam!
Flam the Mighty!
That was it, thank you!
Flam the Mighty! God, they can be vicious once in a while, a magic gonk, so, you could be cursed.
Oh, yes.
People, I've got to sit in this room with them. And I don't just mean my 3 co-hosts here.
Sweating away.
Do we have any letters? Have people written to us?
We do have one bit of feedback, I believe.
Oh, yes.
Woo!
Ooh.
Who's that from?
Catherine. Dragonmaker.
Hello, Staggerers!
Hello, Catherine!
Hello, Terence! Hello, Dave Zilla the Mighty! Hello, Hedda Pertwee! Really enjoyed listening to the Season 1. It still feels weird to call it that. Recap. I suppose if I ever get round to the planned rewatch, some of my opinions might change. But the world may never know. So far, I've made it halfway through Space Babies. Not because I wasn't enjoying it, but because my focus is shot right now.
Aw, poor Kathy.
Maybe I should try the suggested drinking game. Then again, my liver probably can't handle taking a shot every time the doctor says, Space Babies! I have very much been enjoying Big Finish recently. The second half of the 7th Doctor The Last Day dropped last month.
Right.
And I'd say it was as much fun as the first.
Okay.
It has satisfying conclusions and a setup for the TV movie.
Ooh.
Even better, though, the Ninth Doctor box set, Star-Crossed. The Ninth Doctor and River Song meeting was not at all what I expected on first listening.
Yeah.
But really... really works.
Okay.
I think I've listened to all three stories three times already. Yeah. It's just that good.
Mm.
Please forgive the written feedback this time. I really do enjoy recording for you.
Yeah.
I am heading out for a 2-week camping event and should be getting on the road about half an hour.
Yeah.
Sheesh, where's my time machine?
Good luck. Mm. Watch out for the bed bugs.
Yeah.
On that note, mustache, anon. Catherine the Dragon Maker.
Thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
Yes. Congratulations on 450 episodes.
Yeah.
That's not us.
No?
No, it can't be us.
No, someone else.
I refuse to believe it's us.
Well, I hope you get to have a relaxing break away from everything, away from your mind and all your emotions and everything else.
Unwind.
Unwind.
Unwind and, more importantly, slumping.
Eat s'mores. Whatever the hell they are. I think they're chocolate-covered marshmallows.
Yeah. What I gather from Ghostbusters, yeah.
What's wrong with just toasting the things?
And watch out for bears.
Yeah. Now, the bears are fine. It's the fellas you've got to watch out for.
Some of them are bears. But anyway, Big Finish, there's a thing going on, isn't there? It should hopefully be finished by the time you hear this, where they're revamping their website and the app.
Mm. Yes.
And it seems they've completely screwed it up.
Oh.
Right now, the app doesn't work at all.
Blimey.
You can't log in. So, yeah, hopefully.
Does that mean you're going to lose all our download stuff?
You'll have to re-download it.
But we won't lose our
links. No.
I was going to say.
No, hopefully not. Not the intention, I'm sure. But, yeah, it's a bit of a mess at the moment.
It always is. Any battle plan comes a cropper when it meets the enemy.
Yeah, and I've seen quite a few people complain they can't install the new app because it only works in newer versions of Android and Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been using the old app fine, but now suddenly they can't access the app.
Don't tell me it was written by the guy who recently wrote a patchwork update for
CrowdStrike.
Do we have any recorded?
That is it for feedback today. Doctor Who's now over, so it's going to be a little bit lighter, understandably.
All right.
Yeah, that's okay.
In that case, Crumbly, lead us out.
And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of this podcast. But never fear, in the next one, there'll be more of the same. More fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews. More Who Old and Old.
Yeah.
But until that...
B for bandit.
Hmm? Bamboozling.
Bigamously.
Bewitching.
Bigamously? Yes! Seriously?
Yes!
Bigamously?
Yes!
Baffling.
Bouncy.
Bewildering. Badger. Comes bouncing.
Boringly.
Boisterously towards us. This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
Flames. Down the side of my head. Big hot flames. Breath, heaving breaths out of the flames, and they were getting higher, hot and nasty, and the flames and heaving breaths.
You have been listening to Staggering Stories Podcast Series 1, number 451, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Andy Sipkins, the real Keith Dunn, and Gene Riddler. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this is an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net. And use it like a greyhound, race in reverse. Can I wash my mouth out with soap now? with the women's team, they should have Jason Momoa and any women that can catch up to him.
I was thinking sort of Shatner just wearing a pair of rather tight budgies.
And his toupee slips down into his...
Go and stand in the corner and think about what you've done.
No.
Can we get on, please?
Yeah.
I think that sums it up. We can get Who out of the way first and have my rant.
Yeah, venting your spleen.
It gives a chance to Jean to step in, because she has seen that.
I'm happy either way round.
Celestial toy maker.
Celestial toy maker.
What the?
We are going a bit long already after that.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot to say.
I'm not sure we had a lot to say. We said a lot. I'm not sure we had a lot to say.
I will say that the discussion didn't change any of our opinions.
No.